Hi there, and welcome to our podcast series, Taking Control of Your Financial Future. I'm Bruce Lanzer, a senior retirement plan consultant on the TrueSource Advisors team, part of UBS Retirement Plan Consulting Services. I'm joined by my teammate, Sam Maroney. Sam is in the Chicago office on 1 North Wacker Drive, and he can be reached at 312-525-4867. Sam will be talking about how to maximize your health savings accounts.
As you know, UBS serves as the advisor to your plans, to your employer-sponsored retirement plan. And one of our main roles and responsibilities is really to be a resource to all of you. So throughout the year, we have various presentations that will help you understand and develop and implement various retirement plan strategies to meet your income needs in retirement. Today's discussion is really going to focus around health savings accounts. We're going to talk about how health savings accounts can really help you pay for qualified medical expenses, not only while you're in your working years, but also in retirement. You know, when we start to think about how we're going to identify our income needs in retirement, the first thing we start to think about is really the fun stuff, right? Where are we going to live? What are we going to do? Where are we going to travel? What type of activities do we want to engage in? And what are the costs associated with all those various items? The other line item that we definitely want to incorporate within our income need in retirement is healthcare expenses. You know, for a lot of us in retirement, healthcare expenses are going to be a major part of our income need. And according to a recent study conducted by HealthView Services, an average couple at age 65, even on Medicare, is going to have out-of-pocket expenses approximately amounting to $14,100 a year. Now, keep in mind, as we get older and older into retirement, our healthcare needs are going to increase in turn. And from an inflationary factor, healthcare costs tend to increase more so than all other goods and services. So in order to develop a plan to really meet those healthcare needs in retirement, which are certainly going to be part of our income needs in retirement, we want to think about different ways and avenues to efficiently pay for some of those costs. And one of the accounts that you might have access to is a health savings account. And those health savings accounts can help you pay for your qualified medical expenses on a tax-free basis, of course, during your working years and in retirement. So that's what we're really going to focus on throughout today's presentation. And more specifically, we'll talk about how you can pair that HSA or health savings account with your high deductible healthcare plan. We'll talk about how you can make those contributions. We'll talk about how you can withdraw and when you can take distributions from your health savings accounts. And then as you've probably already picked up on, we're really going to interplay retirement and health savings and how you can really marry those to really, you know, meet your income needs in retirement. Now, first off, 2024 is the 20th anniversary of health savings accounts. Health savings accounts were first introduced in 2004. And you can see, you know, on the screen in front of you that the growth in HSAs has really picked up, especially over the last 7 years. So, for example, in 2017, we had about 21 million different HSA accounts. That has increased to about 36 million. When you look at the total amount of assets that are actually invested within HSAs, in 2024, that amounts to $116 billion. About 7 years ago in 2017, that was only about $42.7 billion. So you can really see that the utilization of HSAs has picked up when you look at the number of accounts. You can also see that the number of assets within these HSAs has significantly increased in turn. And what that really tells us is that a lot of individuals who are participating or utilizing these health savings accounts have really started to maximize their potential. As a result of the growth in assets, you can really see that individuals are gravitating towards investing the money within their HSAs and really helping that, making that grow tax deferred over time. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth as we get through today's presentation. So some of the benefits that are available to you that you can actually get from health savings accounts or HSAs is really the flexibility. These are one of the most flexible accounts that you really have access to. And I like to also say they're very forgiving, and I'll get into that in a little bit more in a minute. So first off, in terms of their flexibility, the balance is not forfeited at the end of the year. So of course, you have the ability to make contributions to your HSA throughout the year, and you may not use all that money throughout a given year because maybe you're paying for some of those healthcare expenses out of your own pocket, or maybe you're fortunately healthy and you just don't have a lot of healthcare expenses. So as a result, you have some money, you know, still sitting within your HSA at the end of the year. Keep in mind that money is going to roll over year over year over year until either you spend all of it or you pass away. And then that money is actually going to be transferred to your beneficiary. And we'll talk about how that money can be transferred to your beneficiary as we get towards the end of today's discussion. Keep in mind, you also have the flexibility to choose how you'd like to pay for your healthcare expenses. You can pay for those expenses out of your own pocket, out of your checking or savings account. And then as a result, take that money within your HSA, invest it in the series of investment options that are available to you, have that grow tax deferred over time, and then utilize that money to pay for some of your healthcare expenses in retirement. Keep in mind, the distribution does not need to occur in the year the expense arose. And this is where, you know, I refer to HSAs as being very forgiving. So let's say, for example, this year you decided to participate within your health savings account through your high deductible health plan, and you're, you know, contributing to your HSA on a monthly basis. And this year you have some healthcare expenses that do arise, but you decide that you want to pay for some of those healthcare expenses out of your own pocket, out of your checking account, for example, and keep that money in the HSA maybe for future healthcare expenses down the road. Let's say 2 years go by and now it's 2026 and you have a financial hardship. And in order to meet the obligation associated with that financial hardship, you really wish you still had that $2,000 in your checking or savings account. And you wish you didn't pay for those healthcare expenses 2 years ago with money out of your own pocket. Well, the forgiving part of the HSA is it actually allows you to reimburse yourself for those qualified medical expenses that maybe occurred in a prior year, just so long as you were able to pay for those healthcare expenses or you had the option to pay for those healthcare expenses when they did occur from an HSA. So what you could do in that example is reimburse yourself for those qualified medical expenses from your HSA. But you do want to keep two things in mind. First off, make sure you're reimbursing yourself for qualified medical expenses. And that expense did happen, you know, when you could have paid for those expenses out of your HSA. You also want to make sure that you keep a tally of those expenses that did arise that you paid for out of your own pocket. Make sure you keep the receipts so that if you do happen to get audited by the IRS and they do ask you to prove that you're reimbursing yourself for those qualified healthcare expenses, you have the receipt on file to prove that it is a qualified event. Keep in mind, these HSAs are not tied to employment. So if you do leave your employer and go work somewhere else, you have the ability to roll over your HSA to a new HSA provider, or you could just keep utilizing the HSA that you established to pay for qualified medical expenses. And as stated, you can move freely from HSA providers. You can choose, you know, the HSA provider that you want to work with, or you can, you know, work with the one that your employer has set up on your behalf. And keep in mind, more times than not, your HSA provider is also going to offer you the ability to invest your money in a series of mutual funds. And those mutual funds are going to be pretty similar to what you have access to within your employer-sponsored retirement plan. You'll have an array of individual mutual funds that'll range from stocks, bonds, and cash equivalents. You'll also most likely have a series of pre-diversified investment options like target date funds that automatically take the approach that a typical investor would take. So you do have the ability to make investment choices when investing within your HSA. HSAs are really one of the first vehicles that provide a triple tax deferral benefit. And what that really means is when you make a contribution to your HSA, it actually lowers your taxable income. So think of it as like a pre-tax IRA contribution or a pre-tax 401k contribution or a pre-tax 403b contribution. When you make that contribution, it's actually lowering your taxable income in the year that contribution is made. Then, as mentioned, you have the ability to invest that money in a series of investment options, and that can grow tax deferred over time, depending upon, of course, the performance of those investment options. And then the triple tax deferral benefit really comes into play when you take that money out of the HSA and you're using that money to pay for qualified medical expenses. both the contribution and the earnings actually come out tax-free. So that's where you really get to realize that triple tax deferral benefit. Keep in mind, though, in order to actually be able to participate within a health savings account, you do have to participate within a high deductible healthcare plan. Now, a lot of times when you hear the word high deductible healthcare plan, or even look at the way it's worded, right, high deductible health plan, you might get a little sticker shock, right? Of course, high deductible health plan does mean it's going to have a higher deductible than maybe a low deductible plan, which means that, you know, potentially or most likely, right, your out-of-pocket expenses may be a little bit higher as compared to a low deductible plan, especially if you were to medical expenses throughout the year. But the other thing to keep in mind is that high deductible health plans, more times than not, may have a lower premium as compared to a low deductible plan. So that lower premium may result in a lower monthly cost, especially if you're not going to have a lot of medical expenses throughout the year. So I like to use myself as an example here. You know, in my 20s, I was really healthy. I didn't have a lot of healthcare expenses. Now, at the time, I didn't have the ability really to participate within a high deductible plan, but it would have been more advantageous for me to do that during that period of time in my life if I had access to it. And the reason being is I could have participated in a high deductible healthcare plan. I would have paid a lower premium, so I would have saved a little bit of money there, and I could have taken the difference I was paying in premiums, say it's $100 a month, and I could have put that into my health savings account if I had access to one. And as a result of not having a lot of healthcare expenses in my early 20s, I could have invested that money in a series of investment options that would have been made available to me and have that grow over a period of time. And that could have grown to a certain amount of money that I'd be able to utilize today with the increase in healthcare expenses that I do have with having three young children. So, you know, when you look at, you know, high deductible health plans, don't immediately get sticker shock. Yes, they may actually potentially cost more than a low deductible plan, depending upon your various healthcare needs. But depending upon your individual circumstances, it could work out to be the same cost or potentially even lower, depending upon your healthcare needs. And you can take that cost savings that you have in premiums, apply that to your HSA, have that money grow over time, and utilize that money to pay for those healthcare expenses that are most likely going to occur, right? Especially as we get older in time. Now, HSA contribution eligibility, of course, you know you have to participate within a high deductible healthcare plan. You also want to make sure that you're not covered any other, you know, health plan, like maybe your spouse's plan. You also have to make sure that you're not enrolled in Medicare. Once you enroll in Medicare, you're no longer able to make those HSA contributions. Keep in mind, you can also not be claimed as a dependent on another person's individual tax returns. Now, keep in mind, if you're no longer eligible to contribute to an HSA, you can certainly maintain that HSA, even if you're no longer eligible, and you can still use that HSA to pay for qualified medical expenses. And that question most times arises when individuals transition into Medicare, right? When you're age 65, you're eligible to enroll in Medicare. And of course, once you enroll in Medicare, you're no longer able to make those HSA contributions. Now, even though you're not able to make those HSA contributions, you're able to still use your HSA to pay for those qualified medical expenses. Setting up your HSA is simple. Of course, step one is you have to enroll in your high deductible health plan. And then what you'll want to do is really, you know, enroll with your HSA provider. And more times than not, your employer is going to offer you an HSA provider that's linked to your high deductible health plan. You also have the ability to select an HSA provider of your own. And then from there, what you'll also want to do is identify what you want to contribute throughout the year. And we'll talk about those contribution limits on a subsequent slide. Contribution timing, there's really two ways you can make your HSA contributions. I would say the most efficient way is to actually make those contributions through your payroll deductions. So just like when you identify what you want to contribute to your 401k or your 403b plan, right? You identify what you want to contribute on that monthly or per pay period basis. You could do the same thing with your HSA. And the benefit of making those HSA contributions through your payroll deductions is, of course, it's going to lower your taxable income, right? Because it's a pre-tax contribution. Also, keep in mind that any HSA contributions that are made through your payroll deductions are not subject to Social Security and Medicare taxes. So that'll actually lower the amount of taxes that you pay for Social Security and Medicare. Now, you also have the option to make your HSA contributions really in the form of a cash contribution, right? You can ACH money from your checking account over to your HSA provider or even write a check. Now, when you do that, that contribution will still lower your taxable income in the year that contribution is made. However, that is not going to lower the amount that you pay in Social Security or applicable Medicare taxes. Now, the one thing to keep in mind is if you do make those contributions in the form of cash, right, from your checking account or your savings account, you do have up until your tax filing deadline to actually make that HSA contribution. So, for example, for your 2023 HSA contributions, you actually had until April 15th of 2024 to make those HSA contributions for the prior year. So keep in mind, you do have the ability to do that. So, you know, let's say you get to the end of 2024 and you realize, oh, you know what, I didn't max out my HSA completely, but I want to contribute a little bit more money. How can I do that? You have up until your tax filing deadline to actually make those HSA contributions for the prior year, just like you would have with an individual retirement account. Contribution limits for the 2024 tax year. If you're under that self-only plan, you have the ability to contribute up to $4,150. If you're on that family plan, so that's covering at least you and your spouse, or maybe you, your spouse, and your children, you can contribute up to $8,300. And then, of course, for the catch-up contribution, if you're age 55 or older, you can make an additional contribution of $1,000. Now, keep in mind that catch-up age for your HSA is age 55. For your 401ks, your 403bs, and your IRAs, the catch-up age is age 50. For the HSA, it's actually age 55. And we always get the question, you know, do I have to be age 55 to actually make that contribution, or is it the year I turn age 55? And remember, the answer is it's the year you turn age 55. So as long as you turn age 55 by December 31st of 2024, you'd be able to make that additional catch-up contribution to your HSA for $1,000. Now, for 2025, these contribution limits are going to increase slightly. For the self-only plan, you'll be able to contribute $4,300 for 2025. For the family plan, the contribution limit increases as well. That'll be $8,550. And for the catch-up contribution, that remains the same again for an additional $1,000. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is a strategy that individuals do utilize, and it really comes into play when you have a couple, right? When you and your spouse are both age 55 or older. So let's say you're on that family plan, right? You can contribute up to $8,300. And then, of course, that catch-up limit is an additional $1,000. And let's say you and your spouse are both age 55 or older. Well, the spouse who is actually sponsoring the plan, of course, can make that $1,000 catch-up contribution to their own HSA. And let's say the covered spouse, the spouse that maybe works for a different employer, but that is covered under your plan, they can also make a $1,000 catch-up contribution to an HSA, but they'd have to open their own HSA. Remember, an HSA is an individual account plan, so it'll only accept contributions from the individual where the account is actually registered. So in that example, if both spouses are age 55 or older, they can both make a $1,000 catch-up contribution, but it would have to be into their individual HSA accounts. Now, keep in mind, the annual contribution limit for HSAs is prorated if the employee is only eligible for part of the year. So let's say, for example, you're starting at a new employer on July 1st, right, of a given year. And for the first part of the year, you maybe weren't covered by a employer-sponsored healthcare plan, or you weren't participating in a high-deductible health plan. Well, since you're starting to participate within a high deductible health plan on July 1st, and you're only going to be covered for 6 months out of the year, it would actually reduce the amount that you can contribute to your HSA by half, because you'd only be covered by a high deductible healthcare plan for 50% of the year. Also, keep in mind, if your employer does provide you with an employer contribution to your HSA, that employer contribution is part of the total contribution that can go into your HSA in any given year. HSAs are also not aggregated with your employer-sponsored retirement plan. So as you know, for your 401k or your 403b plan, you can contribute up to $23,000. And those contributions, of course, can be made in the form of traditional and or Roth contributions. And then, of course, you have that catch-up contribution if you're at least age 50 or older for an additional $7,500. Those HSA contributions are not aggregated with your employer-sponsored retirement plan contributions and vice versa. So you have the ability, if you're utilizing an HSA, to really save a substantial amount of money to pay for your healthcare expenses in retirement. And remember, unlike your employer-sponsored retirement plan, the HSA is triple tax deferred. You're making a pre-tax contribution. You're investing that money in a series of investment options if that's what you choose to do. And that money will grow tax deferred over time. And then that money can be distributed to you on a tax-free basis, of course, provided that the distributions are being utilized to pay for qualified medical expenses. Now, let's talk a little bit more about tax-free HSA distributions. The distributions are tax-free when you use them to pay for qualified medical expenses. An example of a qualified medical expense would maybe be like a doctor's visit or diagnostic tests and lab fees, prescription medication, eye and dental exams, even some psychiatric care. If you ever have a question about what is a qualified medical expense and you're unsure if that expense is actually qualified, you can always double check that with your healthcare provider, your HSA provider, because if you use the HSA to pay for non-qualified medical expenses, there will be taxes and a penalty. And remember, distributions may still be tax-free even if the HSA owner is no longer eligible to contribute. And the most common example of that, again, is when we do get into retirement, especially when we're age 65 or older and we're participating in Medicare, we're no longer able to contribute to that HSA. But at that point in time, we can still utilize the HSA to pay for qualified medical expenses. Health insurance premiums, you know, generally you cannot use your HSA to pay for health insurance premiums, but there are actually a few exceptions. You can pay for long-term care insurance premiums. You can also pay for healthcare continuation coverage, otherwise known as COBRA, while receiving unemployment compensation. And you can pay for actually Medicare premiums and other healthcare coverage if you're age 65 or older. But remember, you can't use it for Medicare supplemental policies. Now, most commonly, what a lot of individuals should really think about doing or are doing is actually utilizing their HSA to pay for their Medicare Part B premiums. Keep in mind, your Medicare Part B premiums are really going to be predicated based upon your latest filed tax return. And the higher your taxable income was on that tax return, the higher your Medicare Part B premiums are going to be. And your Medicare Part B premiums are also automatically deducted from your Social Security benefit that you would receive on a monthly basis. So the question probably arises in your head now, okay, if their premiums are automatically deducted from my Social Security benefit, then how can I actually use my HSA to pay for those Medicare Part B premiums? Well, what you can actually do in that circumstance is go ahead and reimburse yourself for those Medicare Part B premiums that were deducted from your Social Security benefit by taking that money out of your HSA. And that distribution from your HSA would be distributed on a tax-free basis because your Medicare Part B premiums are viewed as a qualified medical expense. So that's one strategy you really want to think about utilizing, is paying your Medicare Part B premiums with your HSA, or using your HSA to reimburse yourself for Medicare Part B premiums that may have been deducted from your Social Security benefit. Sometimes, though, HSA distributions are going to be taxable to you. And the reason they may be taxable to you is because you're utilizing that HSA to pay for non-qualified medical expenses. So keep in mind, if you use your HSA to pay for non-qualified medical expenses, that distribution is going to be included in your gross income, and it'll be subject to federal income taxes. And you're also going to have to pay an additional 20% penalty. Now, there are exceptions to not being exposed to that additional 20% penalty. And of course, that would be if you were to pass away and the HSA was transferred to a non-spouse beneficiary. Of course, if you become disabled. And then this is also important to know, attainment of age 65. So once you turn age 65, of course, you can continue to utilize your HSA to pay for qualified medical expenses, but you can also utilize that HSA for any other expense that may arise. Now, keep in mind, once you turn age 65 and you utilize that HSA to pay for non-qualified medical expenses, it will actually be subject to ordinary income taxes. So it's almost treated like a distribution from a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k or 403b. However, that additional 20% tax penalty no longer applies once you reach the age of 65. So the other thing to think about, right, is the HSA can also be utilized as a vehicle like an IRA, right, especially for those individuals that may not be allowed to make traditional IRA contributions. Remember, depending upon your income and tax filing status, you may be phased out from making traditional IRA contributions. So what you may want to think about doing if you're in that scenario or that circumstance is making contributions to your HSA, not utilizing the HSA money to pay for medical expenses while you're still working, if you can afford to do that, and then having that HSA balance in retirement, either to utilize to pay for qualified medical expenses or potentially utilize that HSA balance to pay for other expenses that you may have, understanding, of course, that the distribution would be subject to ordinary income taxes. Now, as previously stated at the beginning of the presentation, your HSA balance, you don't lose it if you don't use all of it in a given year, right? It transfers or rolls over year over year over year until either you use that entire balance or you pass away. And then if you pass away with a balance in your HSA, that HSA would then transfer to your beneficiary. Now, if your spouse is your primary beneficiary and inherits that HSA, they can actually continue to utilize that HSA as if it were their own. So let's say, for example, that you pass away and you have $10,000 within your HSA and your spouse inherits that $10,000 in the HSA. Your spouse would be able to continue to utilize that money in the HSA to pay for qualified medical expenses on a tax-free basis. Now let's say that you pass away and a non-spouse beneficiary inherits the HSA, like say one of your children. So let's say you pass away and you have $10,000 again in your HSA and a non-spouse beneficiary inherits the HSA. They're still going to inherit that $10,000. However, that money ceases to operate as if it were in an HSA. And then your beneficiary must include the amount of money that they inherit in their gross income and actually pay taxes on that. Now, there's no penalties, but let's say, for example, the individual that's a non-spouse beneficiary inherits $10,000. They're in a 20% tax bracket. They'll owe $2,000 in taxes, and they'll be able to have $8,000, really to use whatever they'd like to. It's no longer sitting in an HSA account. So remember, the HSA money really never was forfeited. It'll roll over till either you use it or you pass away, then it'll be passed on to your beneficiaries. And if it's a spouse beneficiary, they can continue to use that money as if it were their own HSA. And if it's a non-spouse beneficiary, they'll at least inherit the money, but they will owe taxes based upon the amount of money that they do inherit from you. So healthcare costs in retirement, we said at the beginning of the presentation, right? According to a study conducted by HealthView Services, that the average couple at age 65 is going to spend approximately $14,100 a year. And those costs do tend to increase over time, right? Because as we get older, our healthcare needs increase. And from a cost perspective, healthcare costs tend to increase from an inflationary factor more so than all other goods and services. So according to a study that was actually conducted by the Employee Benefit Research Institute in 2023, they found that, you know, in order to have a 50% chance of covering all healthcare expenses in retirement, you may want to have about $212,000 to be able to cover that. And then in order to have a 90% chance, you want to have, you know, close to $318,000. So how can you really think about utilizing your health savings account to try and accumulate a certain amount of money to meet those healthcare needs? With the triple tax benefits for the relatively high contribution levels available in your HSA, You know, it's no surprise that these accounts are really being viewed as a vehicle for long-term savings. And according to a study also conducted by the Employee Benefit Research Institute, an individual could save up to $118,000 if you assume a 2.5% rate of return on investments and $193,000 if you apply a rate of 7.5%. But to reach that high accumulation, an individual would actually have to make the maximum HSA contribution over 20 years and would need to be able, of course, to cover those medical expenses with other assets during that period outside of their HSA. So I know that's not always feasible for everybody, right? We always don't have the ability to pay for all of our healthcare expenses out of our own pocket. And we do have to tap into our HSA from time to time. So I really like to use myself in this analogy as an example of how you can think about utilizing the HSA to really try and achieve this goal, to have extra money within your HSA to pay for those healthcare expenses in retirement. As I shared at the beginning of the presentation, and as a lot of you already know, I do have 3 young children at home, so our healthcare expenses do tend to fluctuate and increase from time to time. So what I really try to do with my HSA is first off, contribute that maximum amount over the course of a year, because that does help lower my taxable income in the year those contributions is made. And then I really utilize the HSA account that I do have really in 3 ways. First off, I keep about a third of my HSA in pure cash, because I know I'm going to have healthcare expenses over the next 12 months, and I want to be able to utilize part of that HSA to pay towards some of those healthcare expenses until I reach my deductible. I take that second third of my HSA, and I invest it a little bit more conservatively, because I know over the next 3, 5, 7 years, I'm going to have additional healthcare expenses that I'm going to have to cover, or I may need to cover with money out of my HSA. And then I take that last third and I invest it a little bit more aggressively, because with that last third of money or a third that I contribute to my HSA, I really want to earmark that for healthcare expenses that my wife and I are going to have in retirement. And if at any point in time, I regret some of those decisions of saving money in my HSA for maybe 5 years down the road, or when my wife and I are in retirement and I have to reimburse myself for maybe some healthcare expenses that I, you know, paid for out of my own pocket while I was eligible for the HSA, I always have the ability to do that, right? Remember, the HSA is a very flexible and forgiving vehicle that allows you to maybe correct some decisions that you made a few years ago. So if this year I pay for some of my healthcare expenses out of my own pocket and some of my healthcare expenses out of my HSA, and 5 years down the road, I need to correct that decision because maybe I need some of that money that I used out of my own checking account for some other financial obligations, I can always reimburse myself for those healthcare expenses that certainly arose. So, you know, think about utilizing your HSA to help pay for, of course, your healthcare expenses while during your working years, but also in retirement. Because as we've shown and stated throughout today's conversation, healthcare expenses are certainly going to be a need for us in retirement. And we want to make sure that we plan for that. The other reason why utilizing an HSA for healthcare expenses in retirement is, remember, that comes out on a tax-free basis. And the reason I keep reiterating that is, let's say, for example, in retirement, you have a $8 healthcare expense, right? And you don't have an HSA or you don't have a Roth account. Well, you're going to have to pull $10 out of your traditional 401k, 403b, or IRA to cover that $8 expense, right? Because you're going to have to pay taxes on that money when it's distributed to you. When you have the ability to utilize a health savings account, if you have that $8 expense, all you have to do is pull out $8. So it also allows you to keep those other assets that you have in your traditional 401k, 403b, and IRAs for other expenses that you have in retirement that are outside of healthcare. So remember, in summary, HSAs are really an important retirement and health savings vehicle that you can utilize to pay for healthcare expenses today and in retirement. They are really one of the only triple tax benefits that you can utilize. Contributions are tax deductible, earnings growth tax deferred over time, and distributions are tax-free for qualified medical expenses. And then HSAs can also be used to pay for medical expenses now and in retirement. You know, 10 tips that you really want to take away from today's conversation, of course, is the tax efficiency. HSAs allow you to lower your taxable income today. Also, if you're not eligible to contribute to an IRA because of your income and tax filing status, this is another way for you to lower your taxable income. You also want to think about the efficiency of making those HSA contributions through your payroll, right? Because not only does that allow you to lower your taxable income, but then those contributions are not subject to Social Security and Medicare taxes. Family coverage. If needed, HSAs can be used to pay for qualified medical expenses for your spouse and your child as well. Keep it rolling, right? The money is not forfeited at the end of the year if you don't use it. It'll roll over year over year over year until you either use all that money or you pass away, and then it still isn't forfeited. It goes to your beneficiaries. The other thing to keep in mind, HSAs are not subject to required minimum distributions. Your traditional 401ks, 403bs, and traditional IRA are subject to required minimum distributions, which means beginning at age 73, the IRS is going to force you to pull out a certain amount of money every year based upon their life expectancy table. Health savings accounts do not fall under that HSA rule. Also, keep in mind, Roth 401ks, Roth 403bs, and Roth IRAs are also not subject to the RMD rule as well. You also want to keep a paper trail, right? Remember, you can use your HSA to repay or reimburse yourself or past qualified medical expenses with money from your HSA. But if you do that, you want to make sure that you have receipts in case the IRS ever questions what you're reimbursing your contributions for. If your employer does make contributions to your HSA, keep in mind that those do also contribute to the annual limit, and start saving faster. Some providers offer immediate investing capabilities. Most HSA providers are going to have an investment threshold. And we've seen that investment threshold range anywhere from $500 to $1,000 to $2,000. Most commonly, it's $1,000. And what the investment threshold basically dictates is that if you want to invest money within your HSA, you have to have at least that amount of money in the investment cash threshold. So in that example, you have to have at least $1,000 in cash before you start investing any of your HSA money. Remember, there are times where your HSA distributions are going to be subject to penalties, and that is more specifically prior to age 65 if you use your HSA to pay for non-qualified medical expenses. And there's no income limits. So like individual retirement accounts, both traditional and Roth, you may not be able to make those contributions to those accounts based upon your income and tax filing status. As long as you're eligible to make HSA contributions by participating in your high deductible healthcare plan, you can make those HSA contributions regardless of your income and tax filing status.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.